Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solera Report. It's Money and Markets with John Titus, and we've got a lot of stories today.
Yep. No surprise there.
No. So, but tell us the theme.
The theme, what was the theme we talked about?
The theme was your idea. You said, you know, there's a lot of pushback. That's what we kept saying. A lot of pushback.
Yeah, in other words, right. Yeah. Right. So let's talk about how we got to the theme. The idea we kicked around was maybe there's a trap being set. And I said, that's possible.
But it's speculative.
Sure. But it's speculative.
Right.
That's a wait and see. What's not speculative and what's real and tangible and palpable right now is the pushback.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And I would point out if the pushback gets stronger, the trap can't get thrown.
Right.
Or it makes it harder.
The pushback's getting a lot stronger. In the previous time, we talked about the whiff of desperation.
Right.
That whiff has now turned into an aroma, as we're going to see right off of the bat.
Right.
With some of these headlines.
One of the things that is remarkable, when you spend a lot of time with the wealthy in America, what they will all tell you is, I know things are right because the stock market's up. You know, and so they're always convinced that all is well with the world because the stock market is up. And if I've got Yahoo Finance up on the other screen, and it's a sea of red ink. So,
Everything's red.
Yeah.
So it's stocks and commodities and Bitcoin and
right. Well, the air is coming out of the bubble, and it's very interesting. I don't know, one of the headlines on Yahoo Finance is a picture of Powell saying Powell will have to raise interest rates, which will set off another round of a sea of red. Anyway, so let's dive in. Going direct reset.
Yeah. So let's get into the going direct reset. And the first one is, it's actually a concert from a couple weeks ago, but I wanted to share this. Are you looking at that now?
Yeah, but you know what was funny about this one? When you said it, you were so irritated.
I'm even more irritated now that I've read it a second time. I mean, look at this.
I know.
This is just the promotion of the vaccine. It's so over the top that I want to draw your attention to something in particular.
Oh, reunite the world. Woo. Okay.
Okay. So it's like a Live Aid. Which, you know, that was sort of the famous concert for food aid in 1985 in Wembley in London. This is the Global Citizens Vax Live. They're still beating this dead horse. Like, let's all get together and rally around this problem of people not getting vaccinated. But look at this. We'll feature appearances from President Joe Biden and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden, Prince Harry, Jennifer Lopez, and more. And then you scroll down. I just want to... So all the buzzwords are here. It's a fundraising event. It's relief. Raise awareness, calling on global corporations and philanthropists. We have a human rights, but this is what I love the most, is they say, hey, who will be performing? Who are circus performers going to be in this in this gala event? President Joe Biden, First Lady Dr. Joe Biden, and Vice President Kamala Harris. There you go. There's your performers.
Oh, my God.
So in other words, the criminal powers that be are now openly trotting out our politicians as like circus animals. Like, hey, go get up there, Joe, and do your seal act. So anyway, they're just trotting out the politicians, the President of the United States and the First Lady and the Vice President, as circus performers for this vaccine concert.
Right, but I wouldn't think they would be big draws, would you?
No. It's I don't think that's the point of it. I think they know it's not going to be a big draw. I think the point of it is being able to write an article like everybody's getting behind this.
Right.
And it's all fun and the president's behind it.
Well, you know, I did some more research into what the rates are. And what I saw last week was, you know, we went through the McKinsey report. And the more I dug in, the more it looked like that was distributions, not actual injections.
Right. So, for example, last week we talked about the rate in my county, LaGrange County, Indiana, being 15%. And you think that's high because that doesn't reflect needles and arms.
I don't know if that's high, but in the areas where they had very high rates, you know, so if you look at the conversations I've been having with people in Silicon Valley, that looked relatively accurate. But there were other places where, no, it looked very high given to what the reports are on the ground. I keep hearing from various cities, you know, all the vaccine centers are empty and no one's showing up.
Right. So in other words, whatever the number is now, that's kind of the number because you're saturated.
Right.
Right. You've hit saturation. And if it's too low, that's too bad. You got a big problem.
Right.
And that may be why we're seeing this desperate push, you know.
Well, but I think part of it was, as you know, I think one of the reasons the bank stocks have performed so well is because, you know, the plan is, you know, every needle they get in an arm, the bank stocks go up is what I believe.
Right. Well, those bank stocks may be acting on erroneous information or well, you know.
It's the present value of the future cash flows. And so the question is, are you getting closer to your plan? It's, you know, and they're far from complete. So
they're far from complete and they're sputtering. Right. They're sputtering.
They're definitely sputtering.
The low hanging fruit is gone.
Right.
And now they've got to resort to other stuff. And that's really the thrust of this first part of Money and Markets this week.
Welcome to trench warfare.
Yeah. Well, we're not done. We're not done with bread and circuses yet. Don't get ahead of yourself. Don't spoil it. Okay.
Oh, here's another story. This was right.
Okay. Ohio governor, $1 million vaccine lottery. And you say, okay, well, it's $1 million divided by 100 people. You know, it's, what is it? 10,000 a throw?
Right.
Nope. Look at this. I had it highlighted. Now it's not highlighted. Sometimes the highlighting takes and sometimes it doesn't. The drawing is open to adults who have received at least their first dose of the vaccine. And look at this. The announcement will occur each Wednesday for 5 weeks, and the winner of each Wednesday will receive $1 million, he tweeted.
So it's $5 million.
It's $5 million. Not only that, but get this. At the bottom of the story, that's for adults. For kids, for the kids, we've got a kids prize too. For vaccinated Ohioans 17 years and under, there will be separate drawings where the prize will be a 4-year full-ride scholarship to any public university in the state. So
outrageous.
There you have it. Yeah, they're cash and prizes is the order of the day, right?
Right.
Yeah, and one of the prizes is education. If I'm a kid, I'm kind of angry. Like, how come they? My education, you're telling me 4 years of training for a Walmart job. That's all I get?
Right.
If they get $1 million, I'd never make $1 million at Walmart. Forget it. You know?
Okay, keep going. It gets worse.
Okay, it gets more insane. Okay, right. Let's go to the next one. This is another one I had to rejigger because the original link kind of sputtered on me. But anyway, here we go. Let's get a look at this.
I had to watch this several times. I was in such a state of shock. I'm ready.
I got vaccinated. You're saying I could get this, the delicious fries? Wait a minute. But there's also a burger element to this? Let me check with Bill Neidhart. Is it too early in the day to eat a burger?
No.
This can be breakfast? Okay. I want you to look at this and think about, again, some people love hamburgers, some don't. Really want to respect all ways of life. But if this is appealing to you, just think of this when you think of vaccination. Vaccination. I'm getting a very good feeling about vaccination right this moment.
Okay. That's unbelievable because if you actually read the signage there, the burger's not free.
Right. Right.
You only get the fries are free.
Right.
So you got to come in and buy the burger. He doesn't say that.
Right.
But anyway, so they've now resorted to open hucksterism to push this vaccination.
So at least Ohio offered the possibility of $1 million or a full scholarship.
Yeah.
New York will give you French fries.
Yeah, fries.
Right.
That's it. And they look good. They look like good crinkle fries, but.
Right.
You know, what is that? $5?
I saw one video last night with some military guys. So you had the army going into 7-Elevens. Giving people the vaccination, approaching them in 7-Eleven.
Yeah, that's super creepy.
Yep.
Where are they from? What happens if somebody starts to seize up on the spot?
Right.
Do these army members have medical training?
There was one guy with them that looked like he might be a doctor.
Why? Because he was wearing fatigues or something like that?
No, because he looked prosperous.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's really the entertainment portion of the vax push. I mean, there's a lot of stories like that. Now, there's another element to it, not the burger element that de Blasio talked about, but this is where it started. The entertainment complex is starting to backfire on the criminal powers of be. I'm going to jump a little bit out of turn here, but I want to go to this other story because it's New York reminded me of it. New York Yankees. See this story?
Oh, this was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. 8 fully vaccinated members have tested positive for COVID-19.
Right.
Wow. I thought so much for your theory that it protects you, you know? So they have this
guy. But most of them are asymptomatic, right?
Well, that's yes, most of them are, according to the story. The team said Thursday that shortstop Gleyber Torres, who was fully vaccinated, tested positive for the virus and was placed on the injury list. They said he previously contracted the virus during the offseason. It's like, wow. So he gets the virus before he gets vaccinated and he still tested positive. Nobody ever says, hey, you know, do you think something maybe is wrong with your test? Oh, no. No, nothing could ever be wrong with the test. The test is perfect. 6 of the staff members and coaches who tested positive are asymptomatic and are quarantining in Tampa. Well, the math here is not very complicated, is it? 6 are asymptomatic and 8 are fully vaccinated and tested positive.
Right.
This isn't good. This is bad marketing for these guys.
So I should say you probably haven't seen it yet, about a call for plasma for people who have COVID, saying that they couldn't take it from anybody who'd been vaccinated because the vaccination kills your immunity to COVID and that wouldn't be good. You're like, what? Another marketing problem. Yeah.
Yeah. But look, here's more marketing right from the head of the CDC. At a White House press briefing Thursday, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky called the positive cases among the Yankees a possible instance of new variants. Not really sure.
Oh, gee.
But, okay, well, it's possible it's a new variant, but here's what we know. The cases don't negate how effective the vaccine is in large populations. Even though a small population gets completely affected, 8 people infected, right, out of a team, it's 25. You know, that we know it doesn't negate the effectiveness. Automatically, no. And she says all real-world data and large studies in large settings demonstrates the vaccines are effective against disease.
So here, I just have to say this in defense. If you look at the PCR tests and the cycles they're doing them in, they're totally meaningless.
they're totally what?
They're totally meaningless. In other words, if you set the cycles at where they set them, you're going to get false positives all day long. So this just proves.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the strongest inference out of this, that your test is something's wrong with your test. You just saw that Torres, the shortstop, he had the virus, he gets vaccinated, and he tests positive again. Something's wrong with your test.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
The guy does not have COVID, period. Full stop.
Well, when you talk to the scientists about the PCR test, so the guy who created the PCR test said, you know, no way this should ever be used to diagnose disease, you know, or illness.
Yeah, Carrie Mullis. Right. Yes.
So, but the other thing is they tell you if you set the cycles where they set them, you're going to get positives, false positives all day long. It's a plan to get false positives.
Right. And now what they're doing is they're setting the cycles lower once you've been vaccinated.
Right.
They're setting the cycles down at 25.
Right.
But higher. Just for a test when you come in.
Right.
So you test positive at 40.
Right.
You know, so they use that as a pretext to vaccinate you. And then when you get sick, they set the test at 25 and say, no, you're not sick.
Right.
Wow. So, that's great science, if I understand it correctly.
Trust science.
Trust science. Trust the fact that we're abandoning the notion of control groups.
Right.
And consistency and reproducibility.
Well, we've abandoned all science.
Yeah. Right, we've gone cuckoo. It's cuckoo time. Anyway, let's go now to another article. This is from this is a 1-2 punch from Team Soleri. You gotta like this one. This is the article from the Defender. Tens of thousands of lives could have been saved if research on COVID treatments hadn't been suppressed, doctors and economists say.
This is,
I think Claire did this one.
Yeah, Claire did this one, and she included Skidmore's report.
Right, exactly. Right. Making it the 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
So here's the basic story. In mid-November, Dr. Peter McCullough, Vice Chief of Internal Medicine at Baylor, and 3 other experts outlined safe and effective treatments for the Senate's influential Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. University of Wisconsin critical care specialist Dr. Pierre Corey followed up with more discussion of viable COVID treatments at a December 8th appearance before the same committee. And he says, Corey, the government's near complete lack of guidance on research and treatment options, apart from the vaccines, is unconscionable, right. He says. And then we get to the Skidmore study. In a recent working paper analyzing the determinants of COVID-19 fatalities, the author is Michigan State University economics professor and co-author Hideki Toya, estimated that if the U.S. had made
hydroxychloroquine
available, HCL available early on, 80,000 to 100,000 lives could have been saved. So, that, you know, look at the headline here. They're sort of minimizing.
So this is what the Germans call dust killers. In other words, they needed, it's why I call the injection fraud. They wanted an excuse to inject whatever these mystery ingredients into us are. And to do that, they needed an emergency authorization that would allow them to inject us with a mystery, you know, so we don't know what's in this stuff. And they could skip over the normal approvals and animal trials, because we know the last time this junk went into animal trials, all the animals died. So, so they can skip over all the approvals because it's an emergency. But to get an emergency, you have to say that there are no therapies. If there are therapies available, you can't get an emergency use authorization. And so they literally withheld ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and killed, if Skidmore's estimate is right, they killed 100,000 people so that they could get an emergency use authorization, which raises the question, of course, why do they want the injection? Because it's got nothing to do with whatever was hurting people with COVID-19, because we have therapies. Right. We don't need an injection.
The theory being, if there's even one alternative, there's no emergency.
Right. So there was no emergency. They had to fake up an emergency, and to fake up an emergency, they had to kill a lot of people.
Right. And so here we get into, in this same article, we started getting into pushback. Now, this pushback is from a judge. Pushing back, some judges have ordered hospitals to give ivermectin to COVID patients who have exhausted the few treatment options the government agencies are willing to endorse. In one such case, an 80-year-old woman made a complete turnaround in less than 48 hours.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
So there you go. That's the beginning of the pushback.
So last week, Money Markets, we put up the links for where to get ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine if you want it. So the frontline doctors have really worked hard to make this stuff available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Next, we want to turn to, and I swear we've done this story before, but, you know, I could be wrong. And this is from the New England Journal of Medicine. Preliminary findings of mRNA COVID-19 vaccine safety in pregnant persons. And I know I've read this before. I just can't get over it. So I've got it highlighted there under the results part of this paper. Among 3,958 participants enrolled in the V-Safe Pregnancy Registry, 827 had a completed pregnancy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
827 complete pregnancies, of which 115 resulted in a pregnancy loss, and 712 resulted in live birth. That sounds terrible. What am I missing here?
Well, if that's correct, 3,958 pregnant women had 712 babies.
Yeah.
Now, it gets a lot more frightening if you just look at the first trimester.
But wait a minute. Let me just go to this conclusions here. So you're telling me that 827 completed pregnancies included 115 dead babies.
Right.
That's how they ended with death.
Right.
Okay. That's 13.9%. They say that there. And then you go to the conclusion. This is where the disconnect happens. And I'm like, what am I missing here? Conclusions. This is from the authors of the doctors. Preliminary findings did not show obvious safety signals among pregnant persons who received mRNA COVID vaccine. What?
It's not possible.
What? Did not show obvious how about 14% of babies that weren't born? They were dead. That's not a safety signal.
Well, but here's the other thing: of almost 4,000 participants, only 827 get completed pregnancies.
Well, no, that's okay because it's, you know, 9 months, right? So in a month, yeah, that's 11%.
Ah,
right.
Okay.
So I yeah, okay. There's nothing that jumps out to me about that figure.
Well, if you look at the numbers from this on the first trimester, this is what Dr. Tenpenny was talking about. That was so the number of women in the first trimester who did not miscarry. I think 96 out of 112 miscarried.
It's a huge number.
Yeah, it was huge.
Anyway.
Significantly above what I understand the averages are. I'm going to interview Dr. Tenpenny on Friday, so I'm going to ask her more about the details. But here's the thing. Anybody who's pregnant is at an age where they're not at risk from COVID-19.
Right.
So why would you take any risk on a pregnancy?
That's insane.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, young people have no risk.
Right.
They have no morbidities. They're young, healthy, got viable organs. What are you doing?
Right.
But the push for young people to get injected is on.
Right. Well, they just gave the new round of approvals to take it down to what, 12 years old?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We covered that last time.
I know.
Right. But I think that the powers that be are maybe wising up about this. And that's why I want to go to the next story. We know this is coming. You see,
this one is really disturbing.
Yeah, Pfizer applies for full FDA approval of coronavirus vaccine.
So if you look at the time that a company needs to do the testing and produce the results to get a full authorization, there's no way they've done that.
Right.
And if you look at what's been going on from adverse events and deaths, there's no way they qualify. I mean, you keep seeing doctors saying, you know, if this is any other vaccine, the trial would be pulled with this many people getting sick or dying. So my concern, as you know, is that this is a setup. They'll approve it right before the school year starts, and then they'll try and throw everybody into local mandates.
Yeah, that's kind of where things are trending. But this story, so here's what's going on. The companies announced, this is Pfizer and BioNTech, who are in cahoots. You know, I think that's a joint venture. The companies announced they had initiated a rolling submission of a biologics license application with the FDA for the approval of their vaccine in people age 16 and older. The companies will submit supporting data on a rolling basis for consideration in the coming weeks with a request for priority review. They submitted to the FDA, which includes 6 months of information on the vaccine safety and efficacy. But remember, Pfizer has the criminal conviction for withholding information,
right?
For fraudulently concealing information.
Well, we still don't know what's in their vaccination. We know they stayed out of Operation Warp Speed, so they didn't have to share it with the government.
Right. They will continue to submit more data, including information about the manufacturing of the vaccine in the coming future. Very vague, all of this. It will take, the approval process will take months. Full approval would allow the companies to market their vaccine directly to customers. So there's the thing. You no longer have to go to the hospital. You just go right to the customers and make it easy for companies, government agencies, and schools to require vaccinations.
Well, how convenient.
There you go. Granting full approval of vaccine could also boost the public's confidence in it and encourage more people to get vaccinated. So the way to be transparent about what you're really up to here.
Right.
Let's use the government. As a marketing, hey, we've got Jill and Joe, the traveling circus monkeys, for our vaccine concert. Let's get the FDA to approve the vaccine. That'll really help marketing. Then we'll have not 4 out of 5 dentists. We'll have 9 out of 10 dentists recommending our toothpaste. That's science.
Right.
Unbelievable. Well, but yeah, the approval, so the approval's coming. But I think that's a great point you made about Pfizer. I forgot about that. Pfizer opted out of the Warp Speed, didn't they?
Right. How can you give a full FDA approval for distribution directly to customers when it's secret what's in it? How is informed consent? Every employer and every school that tries to mandate it, they are responsible for informed consent. How do you do informed consent if the ingredients are secret?
If the entire process was designed to ensure the secrecy of the ingredients.
Right.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see and track that. Because that's a real problem.
Yes.
Yeah, informed consent is a big, I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. this is another interesting one. This is a major marketing fail for the powers that be. there's been a bunch of them this week. Here we go. Wow, this is the gateway pundit. Nearly half of all NIAID and FDA employees are refusing the COVID vaccines that they're pushing on the rest of us.
Oh, well, John, you wouldn't want them to jump the line, would you?
So, yeah, right. I want to cut the line. I want to unplug my headphones and play this clip, because you hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
Okay, this question, I'm going to go to Dr. Fauci, Dr. Marks, and Dr. Lewinsky. What percentage of the employees in your institute, your center, or your agency of your employees has been vaccinated?
You know, I'm not 100% sure, Senator, but I think it's probably a little bit more than half, probably around 60%.
Dr. Marks?
I can't tell you the exact number, but it's probably in the same range. Some people vaccinated at our facility and others at outside of the facility.
Dr. Winsky?
We're encouraging our employees to get vaccinated. We've been doing town halls and education seminars. Our staff have the option to report their vaccination status, but as you understand, the federal government is not requiring it, so we do not know.
There you go.
You see how they're wiggling?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't like that question.
So I'll tell you what Fauci was thinking. My bet is what Fauci was thinking was, how much can I pump the numbers and still be credible?
Right.
Right.
In other words, how high can I gin up that number and not get proven wrong?
Right.
In other words, the question in these guys' mind is always plausible deniability.
Right, exactly.
That's not the truth. That's a way distant second. It's not a factor
right.
at all.
So if you're the agency, so the last one was the CDC, right? With Walensky.
Yep, that was
okay.
It.
If you're the agency and this thing is so great, why do you need town halls and meetings to encourage everybody to take it? They're right there in the heart of the medical establishment.
Why do you need a circus
right.
in the White House?
Right.
You know? Anyway.
Right.
Okay, so let's move on. One more marketing, big marketing fail for the
This is the big marketing fail of the week.
For the entertainment complex, Eric Clapton's anti-vaccine diatribe blames propaganda for disastrous experience. So Eric Clapton was kind of on board with Van Morrison being opposed to the vaccine and opposed to vaccinations. And then he went ahead and he gets vaccinated himself. And he said, you know, I had a really bad experience. Clapton previously shared his thoughts on COVID-19 shutdown when he appeared on Van Morrison's anti-lockdown song, Stand and Deliver. 2 months later in February, though, Clapton received his first of two AstraZeneca vaccinations, he wrote in a letter, who shared a letter on his Telegram with the guitarist's permission. And so they confirmed the authenticity of the letter. I took the first jab of AstraZeneca and right away had severe reactions which lasted 10 days. I recovered eventually and was told it would be 12 weeks before the second one. About 6 weeks later, I was offered and took the second AstraZeneca shot.
Why?
That's insane, isn't it? But with a little more knowledge of the dangers. Needless to say, the reactions were disastrous. My hands and feet were either frozen, numb, or burning, and pretty much useless for 2 weeks. I feared I would never play again. You know, he says, I suffer with peripheral neuropathy and should never have gone near the needle, but the propaganda said the vaccine was safe for everyone. So that's the story. But the thing that gets me is this is a Rolling Stone story.
So you got me to go back and read the comments, and it was astonishing.
So this is the Rolling Stone. Right? This is about as liberal an audience as you could find, right?
Mm-hmm.
These people are all over. They're very pro-vaccine, very pro-science. They're with the corporate agenda, oddly enough. But you look at these comments, and you sort them on there's some sort by best. Let me just do that again. Anyway, and they're all sort of anti-vaccine. Vaccines worth $50 billion a year. Follow the money. Big Pharma always puts profits over people. It is also the largest monetary contributor to the FDA and the CDC, as well right. as the Senate passed. Just on and on and on and on.
Right.
And these are this is your wheelhouse.
People have figured out the conflicts of interest at the federal level, and that's why they're going to try and get companies, schools, and employers to, you know, and local institutions. You know, they're going to try and push it to the state and local governments and the businesses and the schools, because they know the whole institution yeah. has no credibility whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, earlier I said, you know, the low-hanging fruit is gone.
Right.
You know, well, not only that, the low-hanging fruit has now turned sour on them.
Right.
There's nothing left.
Right.
So I think the measures, you know, I think we're going to see more and more desperation, you know, as time goes on. But anyway, okay, so let's go to, there's one more sort of transitioning to another heading, but I'm going to show you one more story. And we talked about this one. This is in the nature of coercion. Here we go.
Oh,
see that?
Here comes the trap.
Yeah, right.
So I do want to give the subscribers a speech here, which is,
yeah,
you do not understand how the central bankers and the intelligence agencies can move into and squeeze local officials until you've had to have a fight with local officials and watch people you know get squeezed. I've been through this many times. And if you're sitting in Texas or Tennessee and you think you're in good shape, you need to understand that the Beck brothers are coming and they are going to work things behind the scenes. They're going to pull out the control files. They're going to pull out the threats. They're going to pull out the money. And it's all carrot and sticks, but they got a big portfolio. And you want to be ahead of them. Don't wait until, you know, people you thought you knew are suddenly, you know, it's exactly like the Mexican president. He says he's not going to take the shot. And 2 weeks later, he's taking a shot in front of the cameras.
Yeah, right. Right. Or he's dead, you know.
Right. Please, God, let him not be dead. But
look at the signaling in this article, though. This is Bloomberg. It says vaccine mandates to be set locally, trying to pat himself. Oh, well, we're not going to do this. You know, we're going to let our minions do it at the local level. And the article says any mandates in the U.S. to require people to be vaccinated against COVID will be set at the local level by companies and institutions such as colleges. And that's interesting. Again, we get back to the young people.
Right.
And then separately on Fox News, as if to, you know, in case you didn't get the point there, peeps, separately on Fox News Sunday, Walensky cited colleges or universities that may enforce vaccine mandates for students. You know, and that the cruise ship industry may also consider it for people about to embark on multi-day journeys as well. So Walmart announced Friday it's on board with, this is kind of ridiculous. Walmart announced Friday that fully vaccinated staff and customers can leave their masks at home. Starbucks also dropped mask requirements for vaccinated customers.
Yeah, I want to know how they're going to enforce that.
Ding. Exactly. Good luck enforcing that. Look at this. The hubris in this quote is unbelievable. This is from Walensky, the head of the CDC, who we just saw. This was not permission to shed masks for everybody everywhere, Walensky said on CBDC, said on NBC. This was really science-driven individual assessment of your risk. What? So if she's not giving you, well, I'm not giving you permission to get rid of your mask. Don't think that about it. And then at the end, here we go. So they get to the truth here, sort of at the end. The honor system. Maryland GOP Governor Larry Hogan announced the end of the statewide mask mandate starting Saturday, aligning his state with the new CDC guidelines. There's no way to differentiate between vaccinated and unvaccinated people from a legal requirement basis, he said. And the Walensky finally admits there on Fox, the decision to shed a mask was based on the honor system. So it's all a bunch of nonsense talk.
So one of my favorite ones, I told you, David Hogg, the gun activist from Florida, tweeted out that he's going to continue to wear his mask despite the fact he's fully vaccinated because he wants to make sure everybody understands that he's not a conservative.
Right.
It's like, trust science.
Yeah, right. The science is you got to be a Democrat.
Right.
That's what the science says.
That's what the science says.
Yeah. But it also tells you where they are with masks.
Right.
It's like the mask is starting to take on another meaning.
Right.
Which is good.
Cult.
It's like, well.
It's the COVIDian cult.
Yeah, exactly. It's the C.J. Hopkins COVIDian cult. Exactly. Okay, let's shift gears to going direct in the Great Reset. And let's just get right into it with the story here. This is...
It's working. You know, the plan is working.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that my old partners aren't competent. They are.
CEO pay skyrocketed in corporations while their low-wage workers suffered in the pandemic. I find that this is shocking. I can't believe there's gambling in this casino. During the pandemic, low-wage workers have lost incomes, jobs, and lives, and yet many of the nation's top-tier corporations have been fixated on protecting their wealthy CEOs, even bending their own rules to pump up executive paychecks. Now, this is really interesting because it's like, well, you've been losing money. So how are you making more money? Okay, so among these 51 rule-rigging companies, average CEO compensation was $15.3 million in 2020. Okay, while median worker pay was $28,000. So ratio 830-1. And then they get into, okay, so what's going on with the executives? Well, Hilton CEO Christopher Nassetta had the largest paycheck among rule-rigging companies, companies who are bending their own compensation rules.
Right.
After he failed to meet the goals associated with his multi-year stock awards, the board modified the awards by disregarding poor 2020 financial results and changing the performance metric. Those maneuvers inflated his total compensation to $56 million, 1,953 times as much as the median worker pay of $28,600 in 2020. And so it's on and on. Coca-Cola did the same thing. They used their discretion to give bonuses despite the fact that they failed to meet performance criteria. But the most, here's where they explain it. The most common defense among, well, how do you justify giving executives more money, is the old talent retention argument.
Right.
In a report filed with the SEC, Hilton explained that the projected zero payouts on the CEO's performance stock awards would have impaired the award's ability to retain key talent. It's complete nonsense.
I love that. The great man theory.
But it's just stupid. But it's stupid. It doesn't make your own award is saying don't pay them.
Let me tell you where it makes sense. Where it makes sense is if you want to get a group of people to do things that are above the law and very harmful to many other people. If you want somebody to be a desk killer, then, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. When the board of American Airlines decided that they were going to file for bankruptcy so that they could basically wipe out the pension fund, the CEO said, no, I won't do it. And he resigned. He said, I will not do it. And he said, what you're doing is you're basically saying we're going to wipe out the pension fund so we can grab all that money for the shareholders, and we're going to abrogate all of our contracts, and we're going to process it through, and we're going to use bankruptcy as a cheap trick to basically abrogate our pension fund and retirement liabilities. I will not do this to my colleagues, to the people I've worked with. So he resigned, and then they got a guy who was, you know, for a huge amount of money, was perfectly happy to do it.
Of course.
Right. So
yeah, these guys are a dime a dozen. There's no talent there.
Right.
You know, well, I see somebody like,
what there is there's perspective.
Yeah.
They have perspective. Oh, I can do this. It's no problem. I saw it in Washington again and again. You just.
But I'm saying that talent retention argument's nonsense.
Of course. But it's you're trying to get someone to be willing to be a desk killer and do everything you want.
Yes.
And you're like,
yes.
Okay. I'm happy to navigate the growing distance between official reality and reality in exchange for, you know, huge amounts of money. I'll never forget when I was on Wall Street, I was working for a guy. It was sort of early on. And we had a very difficult client who would just scream and scream and scream. And this guy would just smile and smile and never get upset and smile and smile. I thought, how does he do it? And then one night he asked me to drop something off on his desk. And I think he did it on purpose because he wanted me to know. And I saw his 1040 for the year. He'd left it on the desk.
Uh-huh.
And I realized he's getting paid over $1 million to let Dick Ravitch scream at him. He's thinking they're saying, I can't believe I'm getting paid $1 million to listen to this guy scream at me. But you know something? No problem. Got to pay the co-op, right?
So you're back to the retention, the talent retention. You're saying, I'm understanding you correctly, that basically the money these people are getting paid, it's not talent. It's an auction for people who are willing to kill from a desk.
Right.
So basically, if you offer them enough money, you'll right. find somebody who's willing to wipe people, be a killer right. from a desk.
Right. And I believe that. And I will tell you something. You know, my bet is a lot of the benefits are coming in offshore accounts and off the books. So
yeah, got to be.
Right.
Got to be. Right.
Right.
Okay. But anyway, these stories, just that common dream story, there's a lot of stories out there like that.
Right.
No matter where you go, left, right, you go to Zero Hedge, you'll find the same stories about how the elites get lavish with money.
Jumping back to the local mandate. So it's sort of the economic warfare involved. You know, the new updated chart I sent you this week says 34% of small businesses closed. You know, I'll bet you a lot of those 34% small business owners were not willing to go along with company mandates.
Yeah.
So probably. If I'm right and this is an injection fraud, you got a reason to want to kill them and consolidate them into the desk killer operations before you roll this out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I want to circle back to vaccines just really quickly because I skipped a graphic that we wanted to show.
Oh, I love this. This was from one of the doctors for COVID ethic groups. It's very talented. And they wrote a great piece. I publish it up on the website. If you click on What's New, you'll find it, or just do a search for Doctors for COVID Ethics. And it was very simple and clear. And it said they are not safe, they are not effective, and they are not necessary. And then they had
not needed, right. not needed, not tested, not safe.
Right. But they had in the article, they had all the links to all the studies and the science documenting all of this. And it's an unbelievably credible group of doctors and scientists. But one of the graphics designers said, no, we have to make this simple.
Yeah, right, right, right. Exactly.
Right.
You got to make it simple. So they do it in threes. Not needed, not tested, not safe. And vaccinating our children is experimental, reckless, and medical malpractice.
It really is.
Wow.
Right.
That's a good one. Anyway, I didn't want to skip over that. No, we moved past it. So these stories, though, like common dreams about the wealth disparity and, you know, paying these guys like, you know, a good, my personal example is Roger Goodell, the head of the NFL, getting paid whatever, $50 million.
Wow.
Like, why are you paying a $50 million? What is he going to do? You think he's going to go out and write Star Wars if you fire him? He's going to write an opera? He's going to invent, you know, he's going to invent a high efficiency gas. He's not going to do anything. Okay. The guy has no talent.
Right.
Nothing. He's an organizer. He's a minion. That's what he's good at. He's good at organizing people. That's it.
Well, and he's probably very good at holding his temper.
I imagine he probably is.
Yeah.
But I imagine he has a severe temper too when he needs it.
Oh, I'm sure.
But these stories are having their effect, and we're starting to see. So I want to switch gears and show you. We talked about this. We're seeing a lot more stories sort of reacting to these stories from the powers that be. So here we go. Bank of Canada. They're admitting QE quantitative easing can widen wealth inequality.
They are so afraid of inequality. And if you look at all the plans they have to both grow inequality and make it look acceptable, it's not working. It's not working. When Carson said monetary policy is insensitive to inequality, I thought, you know, I thought I'd heard the biggest lie yet, but that is the biggest lie yet.
No, he said that monetary policy and central banks have nothing to do with inequality.
Right.
They're unrelated.
Right. It's like saying the sun has no connection to sunlight.
Yeah, that's unrelated to heat. It's the moon. Follow the science. It's science. Please trust the science.
Okay.
So this is Canada Governor, you know, Governor Tiff Macklem. I love this name, Tiff Macklem. I used to have a pseudonym in college. I'd tell people my name was Biff Watson. It's reminding me of that. Tiff Macklem said QE is boosting wealth by inflating the value of assets. No, no kidding.
Okay,
Tiff.
So let me get back to this compensation issue. How much money would someone have to pay you to put on a very expensive suit and tie and go stand there with a straight face and say what he or Carson said?
I couldn't do it.
There you go.
I'm not that good an actor. I couldn't.
Right, if somebody offered you $50 million, would you do it? Could you do it?
I could get serious. Yeah.
There you go. So
yeah.
That's the way you have to look at this. It's kind of like, okay, you know, could I do this for a day? Could I do this for a month for, you know, 50, 100?
Right.
Right.
A shocking amount of money. I have to be shocked into that role.
Right.
Of pretending that this is real. But look at these quotes. Just going back to this article real quick. Speaking at university students, there we are, university students again, in Atlantic Canada by video conference, said that while QE programs stimulated demand and helped create jobs, it was also boosting wealth by inflating the value of assets.
Oh.
Where are you getting this idea, Tiff? whose videos are you watching?
But it's got nothing to do with inequality.
No, but of course, these assets aren't distributed evenly across society. And as a result, QE can widen wealth inequality.
Really?
Wow. This guy has a firm grasp of the obvious, does he not? You know? Let me get this thing to load. Okay, so anyway, but there's more and more stories like that. You're exactly right.
Right. Can I tell you something? That is the crack. Or I told you, that's the vulnerability in the Death Star. And that's why we've got to take advantage of that.
But it's, well, they're trying to take advantage of it too.
Right.
Right, they're saying, "Well, there's inequality, so we need to we, the creators of the inequality,
right,
are here now to fix the inequality."
Right.
So how are we going to do that? Well, let me give you a taste of that. The next story, journal story, J.P. Morgan and others plan to issue credit cards to people with no credit scores.
So I just want to point out,
people with no credit scores.
I always find it charming that they think the solution to having no money is that you take on more debt as opposed to you build equity. Oh, you don't need to build equity. Just get, here's some more debt. It's free money.
You need a 29% credit card. Problem solved. What are you worried about?
Well, you know.
So this story, but this is a crazy story. So the premise is it's people with no credit scores. Like, who doesn't have a credit score? You know, some
people
of the largest
just
U.S.
walked across the border don't have credit scores.
Bing.
Right.
That's, they get into this.
Right.
Some of the largest U.S. banks plan to start sharing data on customers' deposits accounts. Okay, so right away, we've lurched into another thread in the story. It's like, what do you, you're sharing customer data.
You're violating customer privacy.
I thought you were worried about people without credit scores. How's you're sharing customer data with deposit accounts? I mean, just like, who writes this? I'm starting to think, I'm not kidding, Catherine. I see more and more of these stories. I'm like, a human being didn't write this story. This is, you can't lurch off into another track. Uh-huh. We started out with a story on a train track, and you're over on the first sentence, you're on the helicopter pad.
Well, you know, it may be possible. They're telling the software, we need this in it, we need this in it, we need this in it. You know, come up with something.
Well, here you go.
This could be algorithms.
So they're going to yeah, right, it is. Sharing data on customers' deposit accounts is just part of a government-backed initiative to extend credit to people who have traditionally lacked opportunities to borrow. So it is aimed at individuals who don't have credit scores, but who are financially responsible? Query how you would know they were financially responsible if they don't have credit scores. Do you interview them? I mean, this is crazy. So credit scores and credit reports are the main tools to determine who gets a loan. But those who pay only with cash or debit cards or who are new to the U.S. often don't have credit scores. And there you go.
There you go.
New to the U.S. There's the key. Some 53 million adults in the U.S. don't have traditional credit scores, okay? Now, to give you a sense of how big 53 million adults is, I find that figure astonishing.
That is astonishing.
53 million, okay? To put that in perspective, the working age population of the U.S. is 261. I just looked it up. It's called the civilian non-institutional population over 16, right? It's 261. So you're telling me that one out of five adults, working age population adults, do not have a credit score. I didn't know there were that many Amish people living in the U.S.
Well, actually, you definitely have a portion of the of the African-American community who avoids the banking system for good reason.
Okay.
And
or you have a lot of people coming across the border.
Right. And you have a lot of people coming across the border in the last 3 years.
Who are going into that 53 million figure.
Yeah.
Who aren't going into the 261 figure. I'm telling you, that percentage is dead wrong. There's no way it's 20%. That people don't have credit scores are like Amish. They have names like Montrager, you know? No, they do. They just...
Well, something doesn't make sense. You know, and here's the thing. All the stories on consumer spending and credit right now make no sense.
None of them make any sense.
Right.
Let's just keep going to the story. The new pilot program is designed to be farther reaching and more organized. About 10 banks agreed to exchange data, according to one of the people. So we get back to the banking exchanging data. What do you need to do that for? An unusual level of collaboration. JP Morgan, for example, might approve a credit card application from a person who has a deposit account at Wells Fargo, but doesn't have a credit score. You really think you're going to have a deposit account at Wells Fargo and not have a credit score?
I mean, I'm speculating, really? But you know what this looks like to me? They needed a legal... It's an air cover excuse to allow the banks to share all the data they need. If they're going to create CBDCs and payment systems that can turn everybody's money on and off, they need to consolidate all the data, which they're doing anyway, but they need to make it legal.
Right. And then you get the cover story here in the last paragraph, which I have a different color highlighting. The plans grew out of Project Reach or the Roundtable for Economic Access and Change in an effort launched last summer by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. So there's the OCC is involved. There's your government cover. After protests following the... Look at this, how ridiculous this story is. Here's their story. After protests following the killing of George Floyd in police custody, the OCC convened bankers, financial technology executives, and nonprofit leaders to brainstorm on how to increase credit access to historically disadvantaged communities.
So they got a problem. So this is like the French fries.
Wow.
You've got people who are smart enough to stay out of their financial control systems.
So police kill a guy, and your answer to that is people need more access to credit. That'll fix everything.
No, they needed a story to justify what they're trying to do. They're trying to force everybody into their financial controls. And the question is, can they sweet talk them in or do they have to coerce or force them in?
Anyway, how's the red situation?
So stock futures point to third straight day of losses. S&P futures down 1.1. It's sort of down 1 to 2% across the board. Gold is almost flat, down 10 basis points.
Huh.
So gold is
wow
moving into the black for the year so far.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Good.
It's funny, I've just been reading a couple pieces on the leverage in the Bitcoin market and how they've been engineering sort of the leverage. It's frightening.
With Tether?
Yeah.
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 There's a lot of shenanigans going on there.
It's unbelievable.
Basically, you know, it's an unregulated market. So that it's just a pump and dump that's completely unregulated.
But it's more than unregulated because if you look at the institutional support for the fraud, it's unbelievable.
That's what it is. It's open season for professional fraudsters and thieves to just fleece Main Street.
Do you remember, did I ever tell you the story of First American Bank?
No.
Okay. Remember Clark Clifford and Wonder Woman's husband who had this, the BCCI had purchased First American Bank but had done it sort of through the back door. And after BCCI went down, there was a big fight between the shareholders of the bank and the Department of Justice that wanted to seize First American and basically steal all the assets. And anyway, so you had this bank in Washington that was owned by BCCI and was part of the BCCI sort of laundering. So Harry Albright, who was had been chair of the Battery Park City Authority, got appointed by Morgenthau to protect this thing from the Department of Justice Asset Seizure Fund. He needed ringers on the board, so he asked me if I would go on the board. So I have this big house, all glass, out in McLean, overlooking the Potomac. And Harry sends out a Brink truck full of all the legal documents on this entire situation. And I sat there, John, for 4 to 5 days, just speed reading a couple thousand pages of legal documents. And when it was all over, my whole vision of the American financial system had been completely educated. And I realized everybody was in on this. Everybody. Yeah. You had the Fed, you had Treasury, you had the White House. This was a major, it's like Madoff. It was a totally institutionally managed and approved deal. And and the notion that this was just some crazy guys who went off and got away with something. Oh, it was a lone assassin.
The rogue actor is
the rogue actor, right?
Is an essential icon of
corporate. If you look at what they're up to in crypto, you've got major institutional.
Yeah.
It's just like First American.
Yeah, it's all like that.
Right.
And it takes a while to get to that, to realize that it has to. You know, you see a few pieces, and you eventually realize it has to be like that.
Right.
You know. Anyway. Let's flip over to the next story. This is the one that kind of, I think, shocked us both. This is right from the Treasury.
Oh, my God. Did you send this to me or did I send this to you?
I think I sent it to you. Yeah. Treasury and IRS announced families of 88% of children in the U.S. to automatically receive monthly payment of refundable tax credit. So roughly 39 million households covering 88% of children in the U.S. are slated to begin receiving monthly payments without any further action required. Eligible families will receive a payment of up to $300 per month for each child under six, and up to $250 for each child.
Now, do you understand what that money is? That money is exactly how much they need to feed that child.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
$250 a month. Yeah. Right. That makes total sense.
That's what they need to feed the child. And I saw this happen. You know, basically what would happen, and this happened all over the South in the 90s.
Yeah.
If you couldn't feed your child, if you didn't have enough money to feed your child, you know, you got food stamps, but if that wasn't enough, you needed to say that they were ADHD. And if you put them on Ritalin, then they would give you Social Security disability, and that would give you the money you needed to support and feed your kids.
Wow.
So they would pay people to drug them. And you know what's going to happen to this? Everybody's going to get dependent on the money. And the next thing you know, it's going to be, the child has to be vaccinated.
Yeah. Well, look at this. I found this part of the story interesting too. Since March 12th, the 2 months ago, the IRS has already distributed approximately 165 million economic impact payments with a value of approximately $388 billion as part of the American Rescue Plan.
There you go. So that, you know, one way or another, that's part of the $4 trillion we were talking about last week.
That's exactly
what was on my mind. So I want to tell everybody who's listening to this, if you qualify for that money and that money's rolling in, I want you to put that money in a savings account. Do not get financially dependent on that monthly money.
Right. I would tell them, you know, go down and go buy some Eagles.
Right.
You know, I mean, some silver.
Right.
Whatever.
Exactly.
Get it out.
Right.
You know. Anyway, that's a very shocking story, but I think you're right that it lends itself to, we can turn that money off unless you roll over and do certain things for us, right?
That money will come with strings.
You know it will. They're not no free lunch.
You know what Franklin Sanders said? Have I ever told you this? He says, all government money comes with a sock in the face.
Yeah, that's exactly. So the next story is, this is visualizing interest rates by country. This is one you sent me, which is, you know, so they point out the story, the theory here, going as far back as the 14th century, pandemics have been found to have a negative effect on interest rates. Eh, it makes sense. Kind of a depression lowers interest rates.
Right.
History shows that this effect is even greater than that of financial crises. Across a study of 19 pandemics since the mid-1300s, interest rates fell an average of 1.5 percentage points. Yeah, it seems kind of low. But anyway, what I want to point out in this story is they have this interesting chart here in the middle of the page.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see that?
Yep.
Okay. There it is. Anyway, so it's in alphabetical order. I just want to, so here are your countries, Argentina. How do they do this? The interest rate changed. So Argentina's interest rate has gone up, right, from 12.4 to 31%.
Right.
But most countries are like Australia. They go from 0.1 to 0, or Austria minus 0.3 to minus 0.5. Canada 0.3 to 0.1. Very typical numbers. But look at the next one. Look at this next group. China. From 1.4 to 2.6%. No pandemic in China, huh?
Right.
Interesting. I mean, their interest rate almost doubles. I didn't know that.
Right.
Did you know that?
I knew it was up. I knew it was up.
I didn't know it was, yeah, I didn't know it was up at all. Yeah. You know, much less it had doubled.
Right.
Anyway, that's an interesting little piece of that of the story.
The spread in interest rates globally between different countries, different populations, is clearly a very extractive management tool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Okay. Let me go to the next story. I had this one queued up before, but sometimes it doesn't work with videos. But this is a story about inflation and your guy Gundlach. What's his name?
Jeff Gundlach. So,
Lach, okay. Yeah, okay. It's Yahoo,
it's pronounced Gundlach. Yeah, it's a hard C, I think.
Okay, so.
So this guy's really my favorite bond manager in the U.S. And yeah. He, you know, he's always pushed. He left a big firm and started his own firm called Double Line. I don't know, about 10, 15 years ago. And,
right.
But he's always been a little bit more forthright about talking about what's really going on financially.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he does sort of media as the CEO of Double Line, he's more careful. He's not going to stand up and say there's $100 trillion missing from the U.S. government, but you right. can tell he's reading and digesting and understanding all of that stuff. And not only has he now really been sounding the alarm about the $163 trillion of sort of debt and liabilities.
Right, of unfunded liabilities.
Right, but right. He not only does he see the risks of serious inflation, but now he's beginning to really look nervous. And I've been amazed at when you're sitting on top of this much fixed income, particularly U.S. treasuries, and money's yeah. disappearing from the federal government at this speed and the behavior, you know, is beginning to look like the central banks are coming in for a major consolidation on the debt side. You know, he has lots of reason to be nervous, and he's being very forthright about it.
Yeah, he is. And this article, going to your point about his maybe he more freely speaks than a lot of commentators.
Right.
He says he's talking about the Fed here in this article down a bit. So they're trying.
So this guy is much more a self-made man than a desk killer. That's what yeah. I'm trying to say. Yeah.
So they're trying to make people not scared about inflation by calling it transitory. but how do they know? He says, but how do they know? How does anybody know whether it's transitory or not, given the unusual circumstances that we're in? And said Gundlach later observed that the Fed officials, using the same talking points, quote, starts to sound like some of the mainstream media, where every single guest from either the tribe on the right or the tribe on the left has the same talking point. And get this, so he says, so you wonder if it's just a brainwashing mechanism, the Fed's trying to get investors into this transitory stuff, he questioned. Wow. And so I'm not going to unplug my headphones, but I want to, so you could see him in this interview.
Uh-huh.
Let's look at his body language.
He's surprisingly nervous for.
He is.
Yeah.
This guy, they said he manages something like $153 billion, but if you look at him, he's not, I wouldn't say he's ill at ease, but he's not fluid like a lot of glib guys, like everything's okay.
Yeah, this guy's not a desk killer. He's a real human being. Yeah.
Yeah, he says, yeah, at first, when you told me that, I was kind of skeptical, but having watched that body language is a big tell.
Right.
It speaks, you know, it's way harder to disguise that body language.
Here's the thing. If you're, some of us get there faster than others, but you're looking at things and it's exactly what happened to Mads Palvik when he got fired by Morgan Stanley for asking too many questions on Janet Yellen. He's like, things are not making sense here, and what we're doing does not make economic sense. You know, that's right. What he knows. He's like, I'm in charge of all these bonds, and you're destroying their value for no reason. What's the plan here?
Right.
Right.
Right. Okay, to sort of jump to another sort of thread, let me go to the story. This is like this shifts to climate change.
I couldn't wait to send you this one.
This is another story. Like, what is going on?
I know exactly what's going on. I know exactly what's going on.
Okay, I'm glad you do, because I was baffled.
So I have more to dig in about the climate change policies by the financial institutions, but if you're going to roll out a central bank digital control system, you need everybody on the electrical grid. So if you want spatial control, you know, and you want to control people's money and turn it off, you need everybody on the electrical grid. So,
for sure.
So, yeah, so you got to come up with some excuse as to why everybody's got to implement the smart grid, right?
Yeah.
And you can't tell people, look, we want you in the smart grid so we can own and control you and steal all your assets. You got to tell them, not, you know, this helps the environment. Right.
Yeah. It's but listen to this story. So this is the journal story. This is a few paragraphs down. This is where I was like, what is going on here? In December, the Fed joined the Central Banks and Supervisors Network for Greening. Okay, that's a group. Central Banks and Supervisors Networks for Greening. Like, rhymes with weaning. Okay, Central Banks and Supervisors Networks for Greening the Financial System. That group, which includes central banks and regulators of major European countries as well as China, Russia, and Japan, started with 8 members in 2017. Okay? The group, which was launched in part as a response to the U.S. announcing in 2017 that it was pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords. Okay?
Oh, so the central bankers are coming back in to make sure they get their way.
But listen to this. So the U.S. quits the Paris Climate Accords. And so this group springs up. Okay? I get that. That makes sense. They start this greening network or whatever. So now the U.S. has joined. So the U.S. has rejoined the Paris Accords.
So what does that group have to do with making sure that Trump lost the election?
And but to round this out, so, okay, the U.S. quits the Paris Climate Accords.
Uh-huh.
This group starts, okay?
Yeah.
Then the Fed joins the group too, okay?
Yeah.
And then the U.S. rejoins the Climate Accords.
Right.
So it's like, well, was quitting the Climate Accords, was quitting Paris just a pretext for this group to form? That's kind of what it looks like.
I think all the plans they had for implementing, you know, what I call the central bank control grid were going too slowly. They weren't working. And what we're watching is an acceleration.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and the Fed's on board. Part of the problem was what you were seeing across the world was pushback. And one of the reasons to shut down 34% of the small businesses and independent doctors and independent lawyers and everything else in the United States is that's where the pushback is coming from. It's coming from the people who can't print money, who have to earn money. Yeah. So,
but what do you make of this? Potential risks posed to the financial system by climate change include losses on loans or a decline in value of assets, such as waterfront property and property repeatedly exposed to wildfires. Commercial banks and investors lend billions to companies that produce significant amounts of carbon dioxide, such as operators of coal power plants.
You know what's funny? Like,
what is this story about? What are you talking about?
Bitcoin has energy use passing
passing
Germany, you know, so it's greater than Germany now. But we were just looking at that story. Yeah. Bitcoin uses more energy than Germany.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So there's amazing. One great presentation I put up years ago about how Silicon Valley is, you know, is a huge energy hog. But what was it? I was just looking on Monday at an article. The miners had set up this and negotiated a huge deal with Kazakhstan, and they were using coal-fired plants to provide the energy for their Bitcoin mining.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here you go. Let's just go back to the story here as it gets into that. In March, the group proposed options to adapt a monetary policy to a hotter world, including central banks charging higher interest rates to lenders that pledge carbon-intensive assets as collateral. These might include corporate bonds backed by a coal-fired power plant, for example.
Right. There you go.
Like, okay, so the pretext is set for interest rate discrimination. Such a move would mean central banks would be influencing which parts of the economy get credit. Oh, no kidding. There we go. We have a winner.
Right.
Such a move would mean central banks would be influencing which parts of the economy get credit. Shifting in that direction would go against the long-held belief by central banks that they should avoid influencing lending decisions and could embroil them in political disputes over the extent of climate change. So there you go.
So I spent several hours reading everything on human impact bonds. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to understand, what is this? And what I realized is, oh, right now, an investor buys a treasury, they earn 1%, and it finances social services. Now we're going to create a bond where they invest in social, you know, they put money in a bond and it pays for social services. So the government guarantees all the payments, but now they get 10%.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow.
Right. So you have a lot of fancy marketing. And instead of getting 1%, now you get 10%. And you get to run around in the social services in a highly controlling way, all the people you've made poor with your quantitative easing.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. It's amazing. Well, but here's why you and I are doing this today. If we can get enough people to understand it and see through the financial pretzel talk.
That's what we spend 85% of our time, Catherine, cutting to the pretzel talk to get to the conclusion of a story like the journal, like, hey,
right,
you know, they're going to control credit in the economy. There you go. That's what climate change is about.
Right.
That's why they're so interested in it. It's a pretext to control decisions about who gets
but
money.
What I'm seeing, in the Rolling Stone comments, that's why it was so sort of inspiring to read all that sad news, you know, so inspiring in one hand and sad in the other. But people are starting to realize, oh, you know, it's a basic organized crime model. Once they get the model, then you're going to watch real shifts.
Once they get the model in their mind.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Right.
Boy, that's a dangerous spot for the criminals to be in.
Yep. They depend on secrecy. They depend on secrecy and complexity, and that's why the pretzel talk is so important to them.
The pretzel talk is out of control now. These stories don't make a lick of sense when you think about what they're saying. Like, I don't know what you're talking. I'm 18 paragraphs into a Wall Street Journal story. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Nothing's making sense. Anyway, let's go to another story. You could explain this one better than I. I don't really kind of get this one. I keep reverting over to that. Problem with public banking.
Oh, this is so important.
Yeah.
I have a suspicious mind. This is the Independent Community Bankers Association, who's prepared packages of op-eds, and they're preparing them against a push for local taxpayer-funded banks. Now, you know, local taxpayer-funded banks sounds fine. What's wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that is instead of doing a state bank like the North Dakota has that basically protects the local community banks and credit unions from the Fed cycle and disaster capitalism games, you're going to use our credit to create competitors at a local level that are going to put all the local community banks and credit unions out of business. So you're going to use our credit to destroy the private infrastructure of institutions, you know, who are not going to be eager to force you to get a vaccine, who are not going to be eager to not make loans to you so that, you know, Walmart can consolidate and control all the market share. If you drive across America, one of the reasons we still have small business is because we have small banks and credit unions. You wipe that out. And this is a very clever way of wiping it out. And the reason I'm so suspicious of this is if you're the central bankers, who's going to do your customers? Who's going to be your customer support desk? And a lot of the current community banks and a lot of the credit unions are not on board to play the control game. I mean, JP Morgan Chase and Citibank will do it, but you know, the local banks and credit unions won't play that game. They like to make their customers prosperous. So how are you going to get a tech support and a customer support function for CBDCs this could be the way they're planning on doing it.
Huh. They do say any public bank that forgoes FDIC insurance would be backed by full faith and credit of a state or municipality. Well, so what? I mean, that basically means they can tax you, the state.
Well, here's the thing. Right? If you have a state bank, like, because I think the North Dakota Bank is a great idea. I think a state bank that is there to help protect the local lending institutions from the Fed cycles and the Fed games could be a very good thing.
Yeah.
Where absolutely. The rubber's going to meet the road is the state willing to disentangle its own state and local reserves, pension fund money from the New York Fed member banks, and are they willing to pull the corporate charters? I mean, if you've got a New York Fed member bank engaging in financial fraud and really harming people in your state, why are you allowing them to operate in the state?
Great question.
Right.
I mean, you're allowing them to do that because it's advancing. They're performing a useful service to you. I mean, that's why.
Right. But if you don't need them and they're doing harm,
right,
you can pull it.
Yeah.
Right.
You could.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to shift gears to space and military and sort of global turf wars with some stories that, you know, I think the couple of leadoff stories are out of China. Very interesting what's going on here. There you go. China lands on Mars.
This is pretty significant. If you look at the speed at which the Asian space programs are moving,
yeah,
it's very significant. And if you look at I tried to do an estimate of how many engineers they're producing and graduating every year versus the West.
Right.
And if you look at their engineering talent, the number of people they're producing, you add that to what's happening in India, South Korea, Japan, the Asians are blowing, you know, the socks off on when it comes to space. So this is a big one.
Yeah, this is big. So to sort of backdrop, here's the story. China's space program took a giant leap when it landed a rover on Mars on its first attempt this weekend. And they get into it. They said the 9-minute automated landing on Mars came with considerable difficulties, given the planet's thin atmosphere and inability to communicate with Earth after the process is initiated. That China succeeded on its first try, where other nations have failed, is an important milestone for its space program. This is a crowning moment for China, said so-and-so. Scramble for the book. It sends a signal to the world that it has caught up with the U.S. in capacity for interplanetary exploration and that it can be an alternative to the U.S. for space leadership. That's pretty
so bald-faced. This is important because if they have leadership in space, then they have leadership in controlling the planet.
Yeah.
You know, space is a winner-take-all situation.
Hold that thought. You know, maybe maybe that gives you control, maybe it doesn't, but China's not done, as the next story shows. So let's go to it. China on brink of laser matter breakthrough. I had to read this a couple times. But basically, converting light and heat into matter is very... Think about what they're saying there. Converting light and heat into matter is more difficult than... So nuclear weapons have already shown it's possible to convert matter into large amount of heat and light, right?
Right.
The reversing the process ain't so easy. But this is exactly what laboratories in China and the UK hope to achieve. So they haven't done it yet. So to be clear, the Extreme Light Station, SEL, is a laser installation designed to produce a laser with 100 petawatts of maximum power. One petawatt equals 1,000 trillion watts, so a quadrillion watts. A goal that is expected to be achieved within 2 years. So they're hoping... 2 years, so they're not there yet. The laser will be powerful enough to produce matter and antimatter directly from the vacuum of space, allowing us to observe in interterrestrial in a terrestrial laboratory the same process that supposedly gave rise to the universe. So I don't know where all that's headed, but that's out there.
Right.
Okay, you're producing matter out of nothing is what they're saying.
Right. Well, if you look at some of the discussions of what they can do to create, including solar energy in the suborbital platform and deliver it to Earth, That's why I've always believed that there was so much potential profit on real estate if you could bring the energy price way down, and that was part of the push to accumulate huge amounts of real estate.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. That's a great point. So China, you know, that's your question about how many engineers is producing is a really good one, particularly in the U.S., where you see that the people getting promoted are basically just professional liars.
So here's what happened. Do you know what the big headline was on space in America during the same week?
No. What?
Big interview with Tucker Carlson with the Space Force commander who'd been fired because he had said things that were in critical of the critical race theory. He was insufficiently woke.
That's what I mean. In other words, there's the meritocracy in the U.S. is so broken that it's even broken in areas of science and engineering.
Right.
Meanwhile, but China is running clearly rings on purpose. Around us.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Right. Very clearly on purpose.
So Mr. Global wants the U.S. to fail.
One would surmise as much given these headlines.
Right.
But let's shift focus to Russia, because there's a couple things happening on Russia that we can touch on. There's changes afoot here too. First story, the Arctic, a test of U.S.-Russian ties ahead of possible summit. So the possible summit they're talking about is Putin and Biden, okay?
Right.
Okay, so it's ahead of expected Biden-Putin summit meeting in Reykjavik, Iceland. All eyes will be on a meeting between Blinken and Russian counterpart Sergey Lavrov, who's great. The first high-level meeting between the two quarreling powers since Joe Biden took office in January. So they're talking about the Arctic Council. And the Arctic Council is made up of the United States, Russia, Canada, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland. Which country don't you see there? China.
Right.
Interesting. China, which only has observer status on the council, but which has positioned itself as a quasi-Arctic power, will be at this meeting. But the backdrop of this meeting is there's sharp U.S.-Russian disputes over the Kremlin's interference in U.S. elections. So just assuming that's true. And then Biden also, another part of the backdrop, aside from the interference in the elections, which I don't think ever happened, he called Putin a killer.
Right.
Right? But yet we're having this first meeting with Blinken and Lavrov. Right?
Right.
So that's going on. So the ice has begun to melt a little bit, where they're getting together. Well, here's
the thing. If you look at the oil and gas, the fishing stocks, and the other natural resources in that area, everybody is eager. It's like a land rush. So you can't not talk to each other.
Right. Right.
Right.
So they're talking to each other. And that's another story.
And one of the reasons I sent you that story is you don't see a hint about those conversations anywhere.
Right. You don't.
Right.
You don't see a hint of them anywhere. You're exactly right. The next story is it just came from this morning. So this is Wednesday, May 19th. But do you see this? I just shot you this one right before we went on. Biden to waive sanctions on company in charge of Nord Stream 2.
Oh, guess what? Europe needs the gas.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, Europe needs the gas.
And so Europe gave the U.S. whatever they wanted. Somebody had to have a variety of backdoor deals. And the question is, how much of those deals went into people's private pockets as opposed to the taxpayers' pockets?
Wow. You're never going to know that.
Right.
Right. I mean, maybe you can put goalposts on it, but I don't know how. Anyway, but the U.S. has blinked in that, so the ice with Russia is melting. Yeah, this is not looking good for the U.S. China's running rings around you in space, and in science, and everywhere you look, it's like, well, the U.S. you can't back up your rhetoric.
Mm-mm.
You can't just throw a temper tantrum and call Biden a killer, and try to do these things. You've got egg on your face now because you had to give in on Nord Stream 2, didn't you?
It's very strange.
It is. It's very strange.
Well, anyway. It's almost as though the because, I hate to say this because I don't want it to be true, but it looks to me like whatever deal they made with the Chinese at the end of 2019 included turning over Hong Kong and possibly Taiwan subject to performance criteria. You know, part of the deal is if they get to the central bank control system, okay, if you help us get there, we'll give you Hong Kong and Taiwan. That's what it looks like. But they can't just turn them over. They've got to have all these temper tantrums and fight it. And, you know, it's sort of like a theater.
But the temper tantrums, they look silly when they happen.
Right.
And they look silly in retrospect. Then these things happen. It's like, yeah, you were being silly. You know, I don't care how many times you say that Russian interfered in the election. It doesn't help you. You just look silly.
So here's the question. If they're willing for the shriek-o-meter to look ridiculous, what is their military and intelligence capacity, you know, to create very painful invisible warfare? That's what I don't know. Because they keep pulling it out. You know, the stops keep getting pulled out right at the end. So we'll show when we get to the charts. If you look at the charts, you know, the miraculous save on the dollar was quite miraculous. You've got to have real firepower to get that kind of save.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So somebody's got some, you know, they may be acting ridiculous. You know, it may look like the Monty Python show on the surface, but somebody's got some real guns.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. The last story along these lines in global turf wars is a story. I swear we've talked about this before, but
this is a food fight.
It is.
This is. I've never seen a contracting fight like this ever, and I've seen a lot of big ones. This is amazing.
Well, this is Microsoft versus Amazon. Basically, Microsoft won a bunch of contracts from the Pentagon, and Amazon doesn't like it.
Right.
And so a federal judge on Wednesday declined the Pentagon's request to toss out Amazon Web Services' political interference allegations.
Okay, so here's what's important to understand. Amazon has the cloud contract for the CIA and the 17 intelligence agencies. Okay. Right. And DOD wants somebody separate from, they don't want to be consolidated into the CIA and intelligence agencies. And then Leidos has the Navy, because the Navy's smart enough to stay out of both of them, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's what you need to understand. So there's a turf war as to who's going to control the umbrella cloud. And what you need to understand is that once you get everybody and everything in those clouds, then you can re-engineer the entire payment system of the government at unbelievably high speed. Now, when you have something that's got this much secrecy and shenanigans going on, getting it cloud-based is, you can imagine the politics of that. But you can't go to the radical re-engineering until it's all in and you've got that settled. So behind the scenes in the FASB 56 world, there is a huge food fight going on. And I will bet you a dollar. You know, I've always believed that whether it was the control file system or the stealing out of the payment systems, that the Microsoft Windows 95 was very important to getting that done.
Uh-huh.
And so Microsoft has an old pillar in this story, I believe. And so, you know, and if you end up with them not getting a piece of one of those three clouds, it'll be very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it looks like they're going to get the piece. Reading that article, I mean, Microsoft's in a good position. I mean, yeah, Amazon, they block, so what? They resisted the motion to dismiss.
If I were Amazon, what I would force is a situation legally where they've got to rebid the contract from scratch.
Well, I don't, is that a realistic outcome?
In politics, anything is a realistic outcome.
Yeah, but this is a case. This is a federal judge declining to toss out a case, right? And that's I just wouldn't read that much into that. I mean, on a motion to dismiss, let me just tell you this. Okay, motion. You bring a motion to dismiss, like in your Amazon. So it's Microsoft has brought a motion to dismiss Amazon's claim. Okay, the standard of review of that is you have to take every allegation in Amazon's complaint or anybody's complaint as true.
Right.
Okay, and if you even accepting everything as true, if it still doesn't make a case, Amazon still can't make a case, then you can throw it out.
Right.
That's not a very high standard.
Right.
I wouldn't read very much into this.
Right. Well, but now they're going to go forward, right?
they're still going to go forward anyway. It's just the case is going to go forward.
Right, the case is going to go forward.
But so is Microsoft's contract, right?
Well, but no, can Microsoft fully load with this case up in the air?
Sure. I don't see anything in that story about an injunction. The judge is stepping in and say, Microsoft, you need to stop. You got to parse it. Nah. I don't see that.
Okay. Well,
I didn't read anything that hinted at that in that story. Now, it may be other things in the works.
Well, there would have to be other things in the work. I mean, my personal experience with the Federal Court of Claims is the relationship between politics, you know, across Washington. In other words, it's a very flexible party.
Yeah, yes. And you, since you mentioned a court of claims may have different procedures where there's automatic stays that go into place that I'm not aware of.
No, I'm not thinking about their procedures. I'm thinking about the extent to which it is highly fluid. I mean, if you looked at the fluidity between the Court of Claims and Dick Cheney's office as vice president and Halliburton's resources, it was a very tight little knit community.
Wow. Yeah.
So I think the political football is moving and we don't see where it might go. But I'm not assuming Microsoft's safe.
Huh. Interesting. So that one's still up in the air. That's Clash of the Titans. Anyway, I want to shift gears. Let's turn to the charts, if you don't mind. What do you think about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's go to the charts. Let me get that queued up before I do that. And then we can just go through these charts and see what we got, because there's a lot of action. Okay, so the first one here is Bitcoin.
Yep.
The U.S. dollar. What do you see here?
So we've got Bitcoin, the red line TLT is the long treasury, and GLD is the gold. We start at August 22nd, 2019. So we're not starting at the beginning of 2021. 2021's all the way over on the right. And I wanted to start with the purpose of that is to start with the date where the central bankers approved going direct. Okay?
Okay. Interesting.
So what you see is everything relatively flat until December 2020, when they, interestingly enough, that's when they introduced the vaccination. And happy days are here again. Bitcoin takes off again.
Wow. That's an amazing chart.
Yeah.
Like every chart you see, you know, you understand it from the beginning of the pandemic. Or right before it, but this one's the knee of the chart is in November of 2020.
Right. So Bitcoin.
Wow.
Well,
you send me these charts. I don't really look at them. I'm kind of wait for your next. That's really a stunning chart.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the question is, how much are they gonna? You know, they ran it up to 64,000. Now it's trading at 38. You know, how much are they gonna dump it?
But look at the other astonishing thing about it is if you go to the lower right part of the chart, but the lower right part of the first chart, the axis, you see 23.48%. That's the gold moving average.
Right. Well, 23.48 is how much gold is up since they voted on the
going direct.
Right.
Right. I get that. But it's not materially different.
Right.
From the move in treasuries, which is minus 3%.
Right.
They look the same. Why do they look the same? Because the jump in Bitcoin is 450%. That's why they look the same.
Exactly.
Because they are the same next to that.
Right.
But and that jump all occurred from November of 2020. That's a stunning chart, Catherine.
Ask you a question. To what extent from a political standpoint, managing the herd.
Yeah.
So that pours money into a segment of society and puts them in a state of euphoria. At the very same time, you're rolling out all your injections.
Wow.
Right. But remember, you're also accelerating your build out of the smart grid so you can introduce central bank digital currencies. So it's a perfect time to pump.
That's an amazing chart. That's just an amazing chart. That was great. But let's go to the next one, the next chart here. And this is Lloyd's.
We've got Lloyd's of London, Goldman Sachs, Barclays, and J.P. Morgan. So we've basically got the U.S. and British, the Anglo-American Alliance.
Right.
You know, these are the guys who are engineering the going direct reset. These are the real owners. And they are, as you can see, they are up significantly more than the equity markets across the board. So you got Lloyd's is only up 17.38%. But the others are up 60 to 90%. Goldman Sachs is up 89%. Right. And this is the same thing as what you said about the compensation of the executives. Crime pays.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what science says. Trust science. Right. Crime pays.
Right. Right. Trust the money. There you go.
Right.
That's another really good chart. Anyway, let's go to the next chart.
Oh, do me a favor. Go back to that chart for just a second. Okay. So August 22nd, 2019, they vote on going direct.
Yeah.
So remember when I said there's no way that this was a coincidence? If you look at the pattern on the U.S. dollar chart and then on the banks, so they start into the repo market. The Fed starts into the repo market in September 2019. They're cooking long. Everything takes a deep dive. Suddenly we have the pandemic, and then we're off to the races with quantitative easing.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I just don't believe in miraculous saves like that. I don't believe in coincidence. I don't believe the angel of the Lord came down and said, I'm going to save the U.S. dollar, you know, and this is a natural event. So it's when I look at trading patterns like this, when people say, oh, you know, this is a pandemic, I just start to laugh.
Right. It's just silly, isn't it?
No, it's not a pandemic. It's a trade.
Right.
It's a trade.
Well, wake up, wacko. Okay. Okay. So next chart, let's go to, this is U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
Right.
So see the save in March?
In March, let's see, March. Yep, see a big time save there.
Yeah, so they go into the market again, September, Fed's in the market, and then suddenly, boom, and we start with the pandemic, and we start printing, and look at what happens. So you get the big pickup, and then you start printing, and now you're
down 8.6%.
Well, you're still holding the $90 line, which is a critical technical line. You dipped below it a little bit at the beginning of the year, but then it held. And that 90, that's what you want to watch. You want to watch that 90 line. But there's no doubt that the dollar's under pressure.
No question. I don't really get why that would be. The 90, I'm not really sure why that would be, but I'd take the word for it.
It's a technical line that they've managed to hold.
Huh.
So
traders put a lot of stock in that 90% figure.
If it breaks through the 90, it has a bad tendency.
Okay.
Well, it can drop. You know, it's likely if it breaks that line, you're in a whole new framework and you get much bigger drops.
Okay. Yeah. You don't want that. Can't have that. Okay. So next to the fourth chart, but not the final chart. This is Vanguard.
So it's VGK is the ETF for the European markets. FXI is the large cap China. And the S&P. Right. And what's been happening ever since this bull market took off, John, is the U.S. The S&P just miraculously always outperforms everybody else. And you just think it can't do it again this year. And then it does. But as you can see, the real winner until very recently coming out of going direct was the tech stocks.
Right, for sure.
You know, because the tech stocks are the one that are engineering the train tracks for the going direct reset. And
they're doing really well.
Yeah, they're off recently. So they've come off a lot more. And the bank stocks have been, you know, have been the, I would say, relatively the flyers recently.
So all of the money from QE splashing into these hedge funds and investment firms and retirement plans, this is them investing their money. They like tech stocks.
Well, but remember also what you're watching is you're watching 35% of the small business in America and more around the world being consolidated into companies, publicly traded companies, because they're forcing everything online. So yeah. think of the 73% of Zoom. You know, yeah. Suddenly everybody can't go to school. They have to go to school on Zoom. And so Zoom is, right. And the NASDAQ are zooming up.
Yeah.
So this is a consolidation of market share into publicly traded stocks. And a lot of it has to be engineered through tech. And that's why the NASDAQ, the QQQ, is up even more. Anyway, so.
And it really all started right when the Fed started adding, packing on the balance sheet, too.
But take a look at what you just said about China in terms of engineering and space.
Yeah.
But notice, you know, S&P way outperforming China.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
Right.
Right.
Right. Okay. Let's look at one more chart. And
this is one of my old favorites. I told you.
I had it wrong. It's not Kitco. It's FinViz.
Yeah, FinViz.
That's what I was looking for. Yeah,
and I just love this chart because I love looking at all the futures. This comes from, you go to FinViz and you go to the futures section. You can do this for lots of different time periods, but it's a way of sort of scanning all the commodities markets. We were talking about it yesterday and you're saying, you know, it's so volatile. And so it's very important if you look at what's up to look at what's down. And and the reason I love this is it shows you, you know, this really does look very inflationary.
Boy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, look at what's down. The VIX and the 30-year bond and orange juice.
Right. They're probably mad at DeSantis.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly.
Right.
And lumber, 76% ethanol.
You know, 63%. I keep getting reports from home builders or people in construction all around the United States that the lumber prices are off the charts.
Yeah, I get the same thing. Right. Press board in particular
is
up not 80%, but up like four times.
Right. And the thing 400%. That concerns me is the household food budget, both the price and the quality. So I'm just going to beat that drum every week and continue it.
There you go. So soybean oil, lean hogs, canola, corn, all up minimum of 36%. Yeah.
Right. So it's not going to translate dollar for dollar into your grocery store bill, but you know there are, you know, big price increases underway.
Yeah,
right.
They're going on right now.
Right,
you can see it in that chart. Anyway, let's switch gears back to some kind of marketing developments that have come up. This is a very interesting story. This is the tide has turned on Bill Gates. Right.
Well, I think the Shriekometer needs to, you know, the pushback is coming, and I think they want to get ahead of the pushback. And
that's what this story is.
Right. And Gates is expendable.
Yeah. That's what this story is. They try to soft up the story like, oh, Gates was asking people out on dates at work, and isn't that bad? That's really not what's going on. The whole story is sort of lame. But I think you're right. It really represents an attempt to sort of, there we go, Gates and Epstein, which in this thread never really goes anywhere in the story. It's like, well, they met three times and they talked about charity. Gates first met Epstein in 2011, 3 years after Epstein pleaded guilty to soliciting a minor for prostitution. And the two spent time at Epstein's mansion townhouse more than once, which was said to have enraged Melinda Gates, French Gates, Melinda French. So, you know, they're trying to gin up like, oh, there's, it's a story written to sort of have to absorb the fact and account for the fact that Melinda has left Bill and there's trouble in paradise.
So this is an asset protection plan.
Yeah.
And if they're worried about pushback, then Gates is expendable. So if you look at when Melinda started to work on the, or when the lawyers went to work on the divorce, it was right after the vote on going direct.
Yes.
And there's no doubt about, I think the reason they killed Epstein is, you know, people were asking, okay, where's the money that's going missing? And yeah, and this tied the Gates money into the Epstein money and the missing money, and it's too many questions. So
there's a lot going on. But that's that whole story, the tide has turned on Gates. I mean, I talked to local guys in LaGrange County, Indian farmers, who don't like Bill Gates at all. I mean, I was kind of surprised.
Do you
surprised.
Know anybody who likes Bill Gates?
Yeah, I actually do.
Really?
I'm not kidding. I hate to tell you, but there's people, they tend to, their politics are left.
Right.
And they tend to define themselves by their politics.
Right.
They like Bill Gates. They think Common Core is great. I'm not kidding. People who are, they're all politics, and they're not connected to reality.
So let me tell you about going to the hairdressers in Tennessee.
Okay.
When you go to the hairdressers in Tennessee, you don't talk politics.
Okay. Great.
It's not the North. It's the South. We get along in the South. We don't fight. We talk politics. We talk about the color of our nail polish. Okay.
Yeah.
We talk about what to do about your split ends. We don't talk politics.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in the hairdressers. There's like 20 stations around. The place is packed. This is about 4 years ago. And somebody asks me about Common Core. And I start to talk about Common Core quietly because I don't want to break the rules.
Yeah.
The whole place erupts with 20 Southern, Dolly Parton, you know, Magnolia, whatever, screaming about how much they hate Common Core. I have never seen anything like it, and how they're going to get the politicians thrown out. And it was unbelievable. I have never met a human being who liked Common Core.
Yeah, well, hearing farmers bitch about Bill Gates not liking him, I was kind of taken aback. I was like, they're not fans. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Well, I told you that in the summer last year, 49% of Republican men thought Bill Gates wanted to chip him. In a poll.
Yeah. That's okay.
Okay.
Okay. They may not be far off.
I don't think they are.
Anyway, another marketing story. This is a bad one. This is a smear job on, you see that? Robert Kennedy.
You know something? This is one of the greatest compliments to Robert Kennedy I've ever seen.
It is.
Because it goes on and on. I went in to check out the editor who wrote it. It is long, and it doesn't come up with one fact.
No, it's so weak. And here's the thing. It's so tendentious, and it doesn't even make any pretense about being tendentious.
Right.
It just goes on. Okay, well, so here we're going to get, how are we going to get to slander Kennedy? Easy. We just go, in a letter to Facebook and Twitter leaders sent March 24th, attorneys general from 12 states, which is not even a quarter of the states, called on the social media behemoths to enforce policies and label misinformation about coronavirus vaccines and ban repeat offenders, writing, quote, anti-vaccine misinformation continues to spread on your platforms in violation of your community standards, Connecticut AG William Tong, who led the initiative, says. So they quote one guy who hates, you know, Kennedy, and they don't quote a counterbalance guy.
Right.
But then they say, here's a lovely giveaway, I thought. Recent polls from NPR, Marist, and Monmouth University found that between 21 and 25% of American adults questioned don't plan on getting the COVID-19 vaccine. So they're admitting that like a quarter of people ain't getting vaccinated. But then they go on, they quote somebody else, this guy Jamie Meyer, a doctor from the infectious disease physician at Yale Medicine. He says, listen to this quote, this is unbelievable. That's what makes me the angriest about these disinformation campaigns, that often they are coming from people with no scientific knowledge, no credibility. There's no evidence for anything, he says.
So I just have to stop you.
If that's true,
I have to stop. Go ahead.
Why do you need to suppress other points of view?
So I told you about the 2019 meeting in Switzerland, where what came out was all the global heads of all the programs admitted they had no science to back up the claim that the vaccines were safe or effective individually, let alone together in one little body.
Yeah.
That was an admission, and that's on the record.
Right.
But this guy just stands up and says these things. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. All you have on that for the to support all these policies is cherry cherry-picked statistical studies. There's no science whatsoever. The science says, hey, you know what?
The science says if you pay people 1,000% more than they're worth, you can get them to say anything.
Yeah, that's the science.
That's exactly. The science.
Right.
It's back. Right. It's back to where you started us off.
Right.
Right.
But they. Okay. So the guy's like, why aren't they? You know, there's no science. Why aren't they backing up anything they say with science?
Well, they don't want to touch the science. That's the amazing thing about the Vanity Fair. They wouldn't touch the science. They couldn't.
Right. So rather than touch the science, what's their answer since they can't touch the science? they do stuff like this. National priorities to combat misinformation and disinformation for COVID-19. So in other words, if you don't agree with their party line, then you're not for science and we need to shut you down. This is a PDF, so I can't highlight it. But you don't really need to read that much to get the flavor of this one. You know, the pandemic is... Go ahead.
This is a great case study in how much academic talent can be bought and fielded by the central bankers. If you print money, it is incredible the intellectual capital you can buy and field.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, you can get people behind anything. You can get people to say, hey, you know what? We've got a menu of fascist measures we want to take. You know, what do you want to go with? And they're like, we'll go with all of them. You pay us enough.
Right.
You know, you want people to, you want us to say science tells us we need people wearing a yellow star? I'll say that. Yeah. Just deposit $50,000 in my bank account.
Right.
I'll get behind that. Sure. Yeah. That's science.
Right.
Anyway, so here's another story along the same lines, the propaganda being out of control from The Economist. 10 million reasons to vaccinate the world. Okay?
This is...
Get this. So the story here is The Economist has done its own study
uh-huh.
to show that way more people are dead from COVID than previously thought. So what did they do? They say using known data on 121 variables, undisclosed, from recorded deaths to demography, we have built a pattern of correlations to let us fill gaps where numbers are lacking. Our model suggests the COVID-19 has already claimed 7.1 to 12.7. Our central estimate is that 10 million people have died who would otherwise be living. This tally of excess deaths is over 3 times the official count. And yet you go through the story and it's like, well, what are the 121 variables? Where's your methodology? Nope. Sorry.
So let me ask you a theoretical question. They say 10 million killed by COVID. In a year when the flu miraculously didn't kill anybody. If the central bankers made a decision on August 22nd and approved a plan to shut down the global economy, Putin estimates it put 500 million people out of work.
Right.
And a year later, maybe 250 million were back at work. So let's just take the number, a quarter of a billion people lost their income or their business or their assets. How many people did that kill?
More than any COVID did.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
For sure.
Right. But they didn't mention that.
That's well documented. No, they never mentioned that. And in fact, I guarantee you that the reason you're not seeing any disclosure of variables or any methodology, and the reason you're not seeing any discussion of excess deaths and how they're computed, is that if you started to probe those and ask the question you just asked, which is the real killer here?
Right.
Is it COVID or is it the economic depression? Well, the powers that be are not going to get the answer that they
here's
want.
Here's the thing. And the question is, you know, what was the pathogens that did the, whatever the pathogen was that was creating the blood clots and the vascular problems from COVID-19, you know, what were those pathogens? We don't know. But there's more and more evidence suggests that they might have been man-made. So I would suggest that whether it's coming from the pathogens or it's coming from the lockdown, you know, the source of the killing is tyranny.
Right. It's not organic at all.
Right.
Right. It's synthetic. It's man-made.
Right.
Right. That's really the central question.
Right.
Or more people dying, or the excess that's man-made, or are they organic?
Well, it looks to me like the... You know, whether it's the lockdowns, whether it's the withholding hydroxychloroquine, whether it's the whatever the pathogens were, whatever, you know, the things I call the great poisoning, we're talking about man-made deaths.
Yeah, for sure. I want to shift to another story. This is a good story. We're kind of wrapping up here, but get to the end. So OSHA, new rules for employer required COVID-19 vaccines. So here's what happens. On April 20th, OSHA released new guidance in the frequently asked questions sections of its website. The question asks whether an employer should record adverse reactions to COVID-19 vaccination if the employer requires the vaccine. OSHA states that if a vaccine is required, then any adverse reaction is considered work-related, and therefore it must be recorded.
Okay, some team of bureaucrats here deserve a huge prize and thank you. This is an act of tremendous bravery, courage. This is people standing up for the law. This is exactly why I love the civil service. This is the civil service at their best. They're trying to cheat everybody out of the workman's comp, and these guys are standing up.
Yep. So what happens when the OSHA does this? In response, several companies said they have changed or will change their vaccination policy to only recommend, not require, a vaccine. Companies have had to back off employee vaccination mandates.
Yep.
And so many businesses have changed their approach, and they could be on, because they could be on the hook.
Yep.
For recording these potentially adverse reactions. Like, well, if you make us record them, which I'm sure there's penalties if you don't record them, and
right.
you should.
Right.
Then we're open to lawsuits. We're not going to do that.
Right.
And so look, there's an interesting little piece at the very end of the story. The number of overall COVID-19 hospitalizations and fatalities also greatly affects the recommendations CDC, OSHA, and the various states have released.
The employers and schools that mandate this are required to do informed consent. And if you don't know what the ingredients are, you don't have what you need to do informed consent. And as far as I'm concerned,
you're consenting to what?
Right.
Right.
They're 100% liable for all the damages. That's what I believe.
Exactly. Right. And they should be.
Yeah.
But you didn't tell them what was in it. I mean, anyway, you have to know. How could they consent to the mystery?
Yep.
There's no informed consent. Informed consent is impossible.
Right.
Anyway, last story. We're getting right at 2 hours. This is from Martin Armstrong. Can you elaborate on this one?
Yeah. One of the area governors ordered the closure of two villages and then announced that vaccines were mandatory, and if you didn't get your vaccination, there were 2 years in prison. And it sounds to me, I checked with someone in Thailand, that this lasted about 2 seconds. If you think the pushback was bad, in Toronto at the protest, the pushback here was enormous, and he had to walk it back. So this one got walked back.
Speaking of protests, I thought I had a video of a protest in Toronto up, but it would appear that I do not. Anyway, there was a protest in Toronto against lockdowns. I will simply tell you. Anyway,
lots of people got to. CJ Hopkins gave a great interview on Oval Media to the Planet Lockdown guys.
Right.
And Hopkins being the proprietor of the Consent Factory website that, came up with the COVIDian cult, the whole cult notion. And one of the things he said is, he said, stop thinking you're unimportant. Everything you do matters. He said, just go out there in whatever way you can in your day-to-day life, create friction.
Yeah, right. Right. And it's back to the protests, it's not just Toronto either.
I just got a telegram from one of the subscribers. He said, I met with my banker this morning. He was going to get the vaccination. I printed out your family financial disclosure form and sent it to him. I told him I can't afford to lose. It would take me years to find another banker I liked. He can't do it.
Oh, that's good.
That's friction.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is friction.
It's friction.
Get out and create friction. Well, I'm going to create some friction with another video soon, but we'll see.
Anyway. Oh, I can't wait. Okay, so you do have a new video that not everybody's watched. So
it's a couple weeks old.
Yeah, but that's a major one, John. It's a major one.
It's an update on the FOIA request and where that is. And
right.
Anyway.
Right.
The Fed has gotten back to me. They pushed out the date 3 weeks, so there's going to be They're going to slow walk this one, I'm pretty sure. So I'm going to move some videos up and start doing some videos about people not asking the right questions. Right. I'm getting pissed about it.
That's great.
You know.
And you did an interview with Max Kaiser. That's up at the Salieri Report as well. And or you can just get it on a search. And the other thing I wanted to say, I was so irritated by the Vanity Fair hit piece on Kennedy that I published my review of his book this week.
Oh, good.
And I don't know if I told you, I ordered that book. It didn't come after 6 weeks, and then they canceled the order.
Wow.
Right. So
How did you get the book?
Well, I emailed Mary Holland at Children's Health Defense. I told her because I thought they should know. I was worried it was censorship. I didn't. You know, they could have just run out of inventory. I don't know. And so Mary sent me one, and I read it. And it's actually, you know, when you the title of the book is American Values. And in America, when somebody publishes a book with the word values in it, it's usually drivel, right?
Right.
So I've never read an American book with the values in the title that was really authentic and meaningful. This was my first.
So did the American Kennedy, American Values, is he copying the Canadian Mark Carney's values?
No, Carney, right after they canceled the book.
I know.
That's when Carney came out. So I'm ready to dive into... Are you ready? I'm ready to dive in because that's clearly the whiteout.
Right.
You know, Carney's doing the whiteout on Kennedy. It won't work.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is this is a perfect example of what you're saying about the pushback. They've tried to white out Kennedy again and again and again, and it just never works.
I know. And you get hit pieces like that Vanity Fair piece.
He is the best person at taking hits and holding his temper. It's amazing. And I assume it's the benefit of growing up in a family, you know, with politicians from the time you're very young, because you get trained to take the hits.
Yeah.
But he takes the hits. He holds his temper. He's gracious. You know, he plays it right down the line the way he plays. He plays it really, really well. I got to give him credit because I have no, you know, patience with those people. Is not with the Shriekometer. It's not my long suit. But he's a master at it.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So this week we're gonna you're gonna post the spreadsheet of stories so people could find the links.
Okay. And so we've got 2 weeks now. So no money markets next week, but I'll be back seeing you with June, and we'll be working in June on Central Bank Digital. You know, on the website I called it Central Bank Digital Control. I can't use the word currency because it ain't currency.
It's not currency. You're right. It is not currency. That's a very good point. It's not money at all.
Right. Yeah. That's what you have to remember about everything. It's not a vaccination and it's not a currency.
I know. It's really, it's beyond Orwell's wildest dreams.
Okay. Well, at least you're the real thing.
Yeah.
No pretzel talk. Did you hear one pretzel talk word out of John Titus's mouth? Never.
That's when I'm done. It's when you start hearing that.
Okay, well, that's when I know they'll give you $5 million offshore. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Salieri Report. John, I will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks, Catherine.
Have a good one.